George W. Bush here again with you. I'd like to bring out a favorite person of mine. He might seem a little mean to you, but he's a good guy. Give it up for my offensive secretary, Donald Rumsfeld. Now, Don, it seems to me that lately things haven't been going so well with the war.
Well, Mr. President, you know what I say. You go to war with the president you have, not the president you wish you had. You know, things are getting better every day, but I just want to tell our troops that the torture and the verbal interrogations must stop. So for the last time, I don't know where your body armor is!
All right, down, big guy.
Uh-oh.
Let's review. So far, you've alienated all our allies, you had a prison abuse scandal, and you misunderestimated our enemy.
Just makes you wonder what it takes to get fired.
I think I got to take a hit from the prison guards and keep you on a short leash there, Rummy. After all, we don't want another scandal like the one we had over there at Abu Ghraib, that prison in Iraq. Now listen, just one more mess up like the one you did, and I'm afraid I won't have any choice but to give you a Presidential Medal of Freedom. Now Iraq has caused us trouble, and now it costs us double than when the war began.
And I said from the beginning that the war we would be winning if I only had a plan.
And for letters of condolin', the auto pen is rolling.
It's tearing me apart. But my time can be spent better, though I would have signed those letters if I only had a heart.
Oh, I can't tell you why I was so unaware. The body armor U.S. troops now wear
is just as thin as Cheney's hair.
I'm afraid there is no ducking. Our war plan's really sucking.
The blame I don't deserve.
And one thing sure is shooting his butt. I would be booting if I only had the nerve. Take it from the bridge.
Oh, I can't tell you why this is the way things went. Tell McCain and Lott that they can both get bent. I'm not aloof.
He's arrogant. Few mistakes he is admitting. When history books are written, they'll be tough on this man.
And although Iraq is rotten, our mistakes will be forgotten
if we go invade Iraq.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just catching up with us, we're listening to the debate, Does Spying Keep Us Safe? Four people debate the motion, Spy on Me, I'd Rather Be Safe. For the motion, Stuart Baker and Richard Falkenrath. Against the motion, David Cole and Michael German.
The same thing is true for the Times Square bomber, where after the bombing, the FBI got a phone number. They asked our guys, do you have that phone number? Did anybody that with that phone number come into the United States? Turned out that he'd given that same phone number to the airline for his reservation data. The department was able to identify him, provide the data, start a manhunt, and then he got on the plane. And was about to leave the country. The only reason we caught him is because we had data on everybody who was getting on that plane. We were able to run the information in the background and determine this is the guy we're looking for. He's on the plane. He would have gotten away, but for the data, which Mike German calls spying on everybody, I would call it gathering data that is already in the hands of third parties, giving it to the airlines. They're going to use it to decide whether you get chicken or tornadoes and whether you get that 3 inches of extra legroom. You know, I'm happy to have that information also used to make sure I actually arrive at my destination. That's the real question we have here is, can we use data that we've given to a third party? Can the government use data that you've given to a third party to try to find terrorists? This is billing information that you've given, that we've all given, to the phone companies. It is searched by law enforcement outside of the NSA program 1.3 million times a year. What the NSA did at the end of the day, through the program and through the safeguards that they established for that program, they required, yes, we gather the information, but no one can search it without articulable, reasonable suspicion passed on by a lawyer. It'll be audited. A limited number of people will have access to it. At the end of the day, 300 numbers went into that on a given year. There were searches to find who they were talking to. 500 numbers came out as potentially suspicious. And only then did the government go out to try to find out whose name was associated with that those phone numbers. 500 people versus, and all used for terrorist purposes, all carefully scrubbed, versus 1.3 million searches done by law enforcement every day without bringing 1984 home to America. Thank you.
Thank you, Stuart Baker. Our motion is Spy on Me, I Would Rather Be Safe. And now our final debater making an opening statement is David Cole. He will be arguing against this motion. He's a professor at Georgetown University Law Center and a volunteer attorney for the Center for Constitutional Rights. Ladies and gentlemen, David Cole.
The NSA is collecting information on every time every one of us calls or texts anybody, your son, your daughter, your mother, your doctor, your AA mentor, your old girlfriend, your new girlfriend. That's what they're collecting. It's not passenger data about people getting on airplanes. It's literally every phone call. And this is a program that the NSA lied to Congress to keep secret from us. When the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, was asked point blank, are you collecting data on millions of Americans? He said, in Congress, under oath, he said no. Lied to us. Why? Because if we knew that this program was underway, we wouldn't accept it. I'm going to suggest that you should vote against the program because it violates core principles of a democracy, transparency and privacy. A healthy democracy demands transparency from the government and privacy for the citizens. But it seems that today we have reversed that, with the government demanding transparency from us, but insisting on secrecy with respect to the programs that it employs. National security is a compelling state interest, and it is justifiable to engage in surveillance of a range of kinds in order to keep us safe. But we have a right to have a say in how far the government goes in spying on us. And we were denied that say, and denied it in the worst possible way, through secrecy and lies. We should also be concerned about the program because it invades our privacy. Privacy is critical. It's essential to human development. It's essential to intimate relations. It's essential to political freedom. People can't speak freely when they fear that the government may well be listening in. Stuart suggests, well, if Verizon has it, why should we be concerned if the government gets it? Well, I think there are a number of reasons we should be concerned. First of all, Verizon doesn't have the power to lock you up. It doesn't have the power to indict you. It doesn't have the power to investigate you for tax evasion because it doesn't like your politics, which we've seen this government do in the past. We saw it in the 60s and 70s with a national security program that ended up focusing on anti-war protesters, civil rights activists, Martin Luther King, and women's rights activists. So it's not an abstract concern. It's a real concern. So I think because the NSA program turns democracy on its head, demanding that our lives be transparent and insisting on secrecy for the government, you should vote against the motion.
Thank you, David Cole. And that concludes round one of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate, where our motion is Spy on Me, I'd Rather Be Safe. Now on to round two. Round two is where the debaters address one another directly and answer questions from me and from you, our live audience here in Washington, D.C. I want to go to the side that's arguing for this motion, that's more comfortable with the surveillance programs that are in place, and say to you that your opponents have made the argument that this program that the NSA conducted really affronted his sense of privacy, just in a very basic way. Now, your side, you're not denying the fact that, to some degree, there's a compromise of privacy. It's just not enough to count. And I want to know why that is. Where is your line, Stuart Baker, on just how willing to be spied on you are?
There's no doubt that when the government collects data, everybody in a democracy ought to be concerned and want to make sure that it is handled in as privacy protective a fashion as possible, consistent with actually having it be effective. The difficulty here is, the protections here are built into the back end of the system. That is to say, the government has the data, but just because it has it doesn't mean it's allowed to look at it. It's set up a whole set of rules, court-enforced, aggressively audited, limited number of people who can get access to this data, and clear rules for when they can do it. They don't have any ability to look at people for...
So in answer to my question, if the safeguards were not in place, you would have a great deal more concern.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, so let me take that to the other side. They're arguing that, in fact, while that data is there, that there are built-in safeguards. And those things are for real. But Michael German, do you trust in the safeguards? Or what is your response to their basic argument that maybe it's not so nice, but it's safe?
Well, I guess the easy two-word response would be Edward Snowden, right? If this data and all this stuff was so protected and so well regulated and so controlled, how would Edward Snowden have gotten so much access to it? And luckily, because Edward Snowden did get so much access to it and because we are still benefiting from information that's coming forward, what has become clearer and clearer, the NSA was misrepresenting the program, I'll say that in the nicest way, and continually going beyond the scope of the minimization procedures and the rules to the extent that in 2011, Judge Bates said it was unconstitutional.
Bottom line, are you saying that you don't trust the system?
I don't trust any system that doesn't have effective public oversight.
Richard Falkenrath.
Neither Stuart or I. We think it's effective in this case. And you've left out a few facts. So this program, the one that draws your ire so strongly, the bulk acquisition of telephone call records. First point. The Supreme Court has held since the late 70s that this data, like what number called what number at what time for how long, is not privacy information. Getting it from the government is not a search. Now, going beyond what is strictly necessary from what the Supreme Court says, the Congress has authorized this provision. It's called Section 215. It was in the Patriot Act. It amended the FISA regulation. People on your side of this debate were against it then, and you're still against it now. But finally, you leave out the fact that this program, the bulk acquisition of telephone call records for narrow counterterrorism purposes, has been authorized 34 times by 14 different federal judges in writing. They said they would not have authorized it but for the safeguards in place, and every 90 days they have to do it again.
Hear great speeches and interviews at Access Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
I'm not afraid to die.
And now, back to the debate. Does spying keep us safe?
All right, let's let David Cole respond.
To Richard's point about we don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy with respect to this information, Mike Hayden, the former head of NSA, CIA, has said, if I can get all of that phone data about who you've called over a period of time, I don't need to listen to what you're saying. I can get such a portrait of who you are that I don't even need the content. This stuff is more private than the content itself.
Dave, but I don't think that I directly heard an answer or an articulated answer to why you don't trust the safeguards, that you said they're not credible. Why don't you find them credible?
Well, first of all, Richard's point about the Supreme Court was the Supreme Court has not found that the safeguards are credible here. What the Supreme Court found was in the 70s, before Al Gore invented the Internet, it found that when you make these phone calls, you don't have an expectation privacy with respect to the data regarding who you called and how long you called for. Immediately, Congress responded and said, yes, we do have an expectation of privacy. And they passed a law that forbade the government from getting it without individualized suspicion. This law, the government has now turned around and perverted in secret to get the very information that Congress originally said we shouldn't get, and to get not just the data with respect to one suspect, which is what was at issue in the Supreme Court case in the 70s, but to get every piece of phone data of every one of us every time we make a call.
Richard Falconer.
Let me try to put this in terms everyone can understand the utility of this. So Professor Cole, Mike German, Stuart Baker, I, John, we're here at the same place, same time, participating in complex operation. I, in fact, never had a phone call with David Cole. Nonetheless, we're here doing something relatively complicated. Now, it turns out—
You mean putting on this show?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. We talked to another person.
You have no idea how complicated
it is. We talked to another person who is in the audience and was the coordinator of this, who then put us together, right? That is how plots are unraveled. They find out about one perp, they look at the communications pattern, they identify the network, and they can defuse the plot. So imagine this was not a debate but a bombing. This is how, this call record data is how it gets unraveled and stopped, and it's why it matters. This data, for very good reasons, the government and the Congress and the court do not hold that you have the same expectations of the right to privacy as you do in your bedroom.
Let me bring in Michael German and move the topic a little bit to the issue of practicality, because, Michael, you made the case in your opening statement against this motion, Spy on Me, I'd Rather Be Safe. You made the case that the flood of data is actually, it's overload, that it can't be used, and yet we heard Stuart Baker, your opponent, get up and go through a number of cases that he worked where, in fact, the availability of the data after crimes were committed helped track down, put together how the plot was put together and make some pretty decent arrests.
First of all, it was sold as a preventative measure. This is for preventing terrorism, not for solving a terrorist bombing. So, you know, I think that the analysts at the NCTC really say it all. So when another I was going to quote, there are so many databases, people don't even know what buttons to push. They don't know where to get information, or they may even already have it and not know it. Another said, more information isn't necessarily better. Better information is better. So that's what we have to focus on. How do we let law enforcement have the tools it needs to get the bad guys without impacting the rights of the rest of us? And I think the founders did a pretty good job of setting up a system. There have been these cases that they say these were solved with this program.
So you're saying we don't know whether he's telling the truth?
Right, because the
not
public—
And I want to make clear that you're not calling kissing him with dishonesty. What I'm saying is there's no check to know whether the story is true or not.
It's also worth noting that Stuart did not say that the NSA data mining program solved any of these. What he said was the passenger data program. When the NSA was asked point blank by Congress and by a friendly member of Congress, can you tell us some terrorist plots that you've stopped by virtue of the NSA data mining program? He said, yes, one. And it was the one that Mike referred to earlier. It was about an $8,000 transmission. And the member of Congress who was friendly to this, to the program, said, wait a minute, you have cases of violence, right, that you stopped, not just transfer of money. And the NSA guy had to say,
actually,
no.
Stuart Baker, we've been quoting you for quite a few minutes here without letting you speak.
I think I'm winning. I have to say there's a little confusion here. I hear Mike German saying, all of these data collection programs are bad. And I think I hear Professor Cole saying, oh, no, spying on us is fine if you're gathering data about travel reservations or border crossings. All of that data isn't the kind of spying on us that we're opposed to. We're opposed to this one program that relates to NSA. On the question of whether NSA and its program responds to a very real problem, let's remember how they got started with this program. In the months before 9/11, NSA was listening to communications in Yemen, and they heard calls from an al-Qaeda operative. What they didn't know is that al-Qaeda operative was planning the hijacking in the United States, and those calls were coming from inside the United States because they had no way to look inside the United States to see where these calls were coming from. If they had known months before the attack, there would have been an all-points bulletin for that person. They would have found him, and probably the attack would not have occurred. When you have a failure like that, you ask, what can we do to make sure that never happens again? And this program responds in part to that concern. And I think, that's a lesson that is written in blood for the National Security Agency.
Michael, again,
the public record disputes that. The CIA did know he was in the United States. That the CIA wasn't talking to the NSA or the FBI or Customs is a totally different issue than whether they needed to collect the information. There were people in our intelligence community in both the CIA and NSA who knew they were in
the here and there, but the NSA did not know because they had no tools to know it. To say, well, if somebody else had done their job perfectly, you wouldn't have needed this program, is to say, if the world were perfect, we wouldn't need counterterrorism.
But you have to fix the problem that exists, not create a new problem by gathering data you don't need.
I'm John Donvan, and you're listening to Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on American shores. We have four panelists, two teams of two, arguing this motion. Does domestic spying keep us safe? Stay with us. Hello, I'm John Donvan, moderator of Intelligence Squared U.S. Join us online at IQ2US.org to vote on the motion and keep the debate going. We are in the question and answer section of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate. I'm John Donvan. We have four debaters, two against two, arguing it out over this motion. Spy on me, I'd rather be safe. The question, sir, right there.
Hi, my name is Michael. Is there an alternative implementable replacement to these data collection programs to keep us safe?
I think there is. I think David Cole. The framers came up with an alternative. It's an alternative that we've used for 200-plus years. What the Fourth Amendment was designed to stop was dragnet surveillance, general search warrants that gave the government the power to just pick up everybody's information in the hope that they'd find a bad guy. So I think we should stick with the way we've been doing it for 200 years and not let technology and the Internet push us towards dragnet surveillance.
We have, in fact, stuck with that for information the Supreme Court deems personal privacy information. We just don't, for this category of information, which you think should be categorized, but the rest of the legal system in the United States doesn't.
Well, but that's actually
the problem.
But that's actually
wrong. Your
standard
still applies to content. What we're talking about here is information which you or whoever have given to a third party, namely a telecommunications provider, and that they have in their system to use for their purposes, and as Stuart explained, the government needs for its purposes from time to time. So you're confusing the discussion by suggesting they're the same. These are different categories of information. The entire system is built around this distinction.
Well, I'm not the only one who says that this information gives all kinds of private information. Mike Hayden has said that it's more valuable than the content itself in terms of determining what someone's doing. That's number one. Number two, the reality is that everything we do today is shared with a third party. Every time you walk anyone with your phone, you're telling the phone company where you are. Should the government be able to get that without any individualized suspicion?
In the chasm of our sorrow, let us not forget we are all believers in a truth stronger than death. Grant us healing for the suffering, comfort for the comfortless. Let us choose the light that built the dream to give us peace. In our pain, in our anger, let us still recall we are each of us a stranger, but we are kindred all. As we find ourselves in heroes, so we'll also find our flaws. Let us find the strength that we will need. Give us peace. freedom shines. Let us choose our course with care. Let us leave the wheel of vengeance, forsake the path of fear. Let us choose the road to the truth.
And now, messages from Access Sacramento.